Okay, a lot of times when we talk about child content marketing and different things like that, you can kind of get around parts of what I talk about just from me reiterating it in the next webinar. But if you want to follow this annual review cycle that we're doing, which is 5 webinars, I really recommend catching each and every one. So let me just pull up, because I was hoping most of you would have caught it. But I'm just going to pull up for myself in the background my slides from the previous week, which I accidentally also overwrote while getting all the technical stuff sorted out for the webinar today. But I do have the PDFs in the coaching library. So just to really quickly, for those of you who weren't here last time, look back at what we talked about, because it's really fundamental, is we talked about the underlying reasons why it's so important to do this annual review process, which kind of seems like, oh, you must know because you're here this week listening in for this. But I have spent so many years now, even beyond the ones that you guys know about, writing about freelancing, because even though the six-figure travel writing roadmap came out now, wow, I guess it was 2016, so it was last year in May it came out officially, and I spent 18 months before that researching that book. I spent several years before that writing about freelance travel writing for a different market before I started writing about it in the travel context. So I wrote about freelance writing and how to be a freelance writer and how to run freelance businesses as a ghostwriter for several years. And I have spent a lot of that time, part of it just writing and reading online, but I've spent a lot of that time going to conferences and talking to different people. And I can tell you for a 100% fact that the people that I have seen over the course of 4 or 5 years literally turn themselves into million or multi-million dollar businesses do this kind of thing religiously. And if you have been following the blog posts we've been putting up this week that are kind of companions to this series, you'll notice that I talked a lot about this idea of just kind of covering your eyes and waiting to see what happened. And the thing is that the people that I see who aren't making the type of progress that I want, that's what they're doing. Whereas the people, or not just that I want them, but that they want, but the people who are just killing it unimaginably, they could never have thought they would have the success that they have now. They are really, really religious about this process, not about being sticklers to a plan that they have to implement on a certain day every year that they set really far in advance, but about this process of taking the time out of their life at the end of the year to look back and to look forward. So we talked quite a bit about that last week, and one name that I'm going to write here again in this week's box, if I can find the right tab, there we go, is Chris Guillebeau. Do any of you guys know, besides me having mentioned him last week, for those of you that were on the call last week, do any of you guys know who Chris Guillebeau is? He runs a blog called Art of Nonconformity. He has a lot of products around travel hacking, traveling in points and miles that you might be familiar with. He runs the Travel Hacking Cartel. He runs the World Domination Summit. He used to run an event for freelancers called Pioneer Nation or small business owners. He does a lot of stuff in this space. And he has been doing this annual review process for several, several years. And he's now got, I think, 5 New York Times bestselling books. And he has been doing his annual review process publicly for all of these years. And so he's a really great resource to look at somebody who is not the most gregarious and outgoing person by any stretch of the imagination, doing this very publicly, and that ownership of where he is and how that has propelled him forward. So just one more bit of reiteration for those of you who weren't here last week. Like I said, last week we did quite a few things, and one of the things that we did was ask some tough questions of yourself. But we talked about 7 different things that can get in the way of this process that I want to make sure that all of you guys are familiar with. So one is what we're really going to tackle really deeply this week, which is not looking really clearly at the economics of your costs and your income and the interplay between those things, but also just not looking at them, period. And relatedly, and this is what we're going to get into in the upcoming weeks, is not having income goals set and working very specifically on making them happen. Some of the things that can get in the way of that are shiny freelance project syndrome, which is a new super long term that I just coined, which is when you have too many goals that you're trying to pursue and you can't make headway on any of them. But some other ones are when you just have too many quote unquote real life obligations on your plate, such as being in the sandwich generation and having very sick parents that take up your time and you can't feel guilty about that. or just being plain exhausted from various things in your life, which could be health issues that just keep you from thinking creatively, or working a lot on freelance writing, but not freelance writing that's what you want to do and not at a rate that you should be paid, that makes you resent your work, or needing to take that step back from your work to have fun and do other things so that you can have a perspective on your life. So those are seven things that we talked about that can kind of get in the way of that process. Oh, great. Some of you know Chris. Jade, I'm curious where he came up this week. So Jade just mentioned that Chris Guillebeau's new project is this thing, Side Hustle School. Side Hustle School, by the way, is a really great bit of inspiration for those of you who are either just getting into this, just getting into travel writing, or just getting into it on a freelance basis, or feel a little bit stuck about where you are. Because what Chris does with Side Hustle School is he has a daily podcast. I can't remember if it's every weekday or every day. I'm pretty sure it's every single day. He has a daily podcast where he profiles someone doing just a really cool side hustle, which is a freelance type thing, which might be a small business or might be a hobby that they earn money from. So it's a really great way to open your eyes to other things that you can be doing if you feel stuck in a rut. But we're going to talk more about ruts next week. This week, we are going to talk about how to catalog the work and opportunities you have now to see where you want to go. It's a really euphemistic title for looking at your income and expenses. But if I put, hey guys, we're going to look at your income and expenses this week, everybody would freak out and not show up for the webinar because nobody wants to talk about money, right? This is a huge thing. I spent way more time than I usually do this week just Googling for some really, really basic touch points for this call. And I was shocked by how many freelancers, small business owners, people who coach freelancers and small business owners, websites about productivity for freelancers and small business owners did not talk about looking at your business numbers for the past year. I was just shocked. I had to really dig around and go into some things that were for larger businesses and look at how they work and think of ways that those are applicable to you guys. But it really came back to a lot of stuff that I have been writing about for several years, and that is being tuned into your numbers and being honest about them. So in that vein, what we're going to talk about today is threefold. So as this webinar is about getting on top of your numbers and getting honest with them, there's three aspects to that. So one of them is assembling your income. And I've been talking with some people who are new to the coaching program and some people who have come to various events recently. And I've been doing a lot of, I say that this is okay and that this happens normally, so please forgive yourself lately. And I think some of that is because now at the end of the year, especially Thanksgiving was at a weird time this year, if you live in America, we have that push. There's this year-end push that happens where you just see, as a freelancer, you just see this ticking clock of the number of work days left in the year. And rather than feel excited, like most people who have desk jobs that they get to put their work aside at the end of the year, we just feel like the number of days that we have remaining to get income for this year, to set up income for next year, to hit goals, to get pitches in front of editors, the number of days remaining for all of these things is just waning, and we don't know what to do about it. We just feel like we aren't ready, and it can be a very stressful time as a result. So as we look at your numbers for the year, I said this last webinar, so for those of you that are new this time, I want to say it again. Please don't feel, any of you, because it helps people not feel like they're not comfortable. Please don't feel like you need to share any of your numbers in the webinar chat box, okay? Because I want us all to be able to do this work on our own and not feel any feelings, basically, good or bad, about those numbers. We are looking at them as data. So we're going to look at some ways to look at them that are beneficial rather than making us feel prejudiced against ourselves and sabotaging our future efforts accordingly. And then we're going to talk about how to look at your marketing efforts. And I know this is a thing that some of you haven't been marketing. Some of you perhaps have been marketing, but not with success. But it's so important that in either case, we get honest about what that is. Because as I said in the blog post and the newsletter preceding today's call, if you don't look at that, hard and seriously with your eyes open, then you can't realistically assess the validity and the feasibility of steps that you can take to change your state, your status, your work portfolio, your clients, your workload, your income, unless you can be really honest about what got you to where you are right now. And then we're going to look at another part that I think people forget. And I'm actually going to look at this in a totally different way. So I think I'm going to look at it differently in terms of what types of expenses that we're going to look at, but I'm also going to look at them in terms of reminding you that you need to spend money on your business. And I don't mean on me, but I mean on things like travel and whatnot. So let's dive right in. Like I said, we're going to look at income, marketing, and expenses. So we're going to look at pulling these numbers, and you can work on pulling them now in the background while we're talking. You can do it later. But next week, so like I said, all these webinars are super sequential. Next week, we're going to be looking at those numbers together and drawing conclusions from them. So make sure if you're not doing it now, that you try to hustle those numbers together before we all get together next week. And an interesting thing came up when we sent out this survey that's ended now about your travel writing and how you came to travel writing and different things like that, is that I didn't ask any income related questions, but I found a lot of things in your answer that were related to income and this thing called a scarcity versus abundance mindset. So as we are walking through right now, talking about where your income is and where your expenses are and where they could be, I really want you guys to start thinking about how being clear on these numbers for yourself helps you know how to spend your time, and also see that making a budget for yourself around investing and learning can have a dramatic effect on your work. And even if that budget is time, I think that I was just talking about this on the coaching call, and the person was saying that it seems like I'm more productive than most people. And I responded that I think I'm an absolute layabout. I think I'm one of the most lazy people ever. And we all have these certain ideas in our head about how our time should be budgeted. And some of us use extra time on, you know, researching some nitty-gritty piece of information that doesn't really matter to the article that we're working on, or on doing interactions with a certain number of people on social media, even though our blog isn't something that's really related to our income goals, but just something that we're maintaining. And I think it's really important, and we're not going to specifically talk about it today, so that's why I want to invite you to do it on your own, to think as well about how you are budgeting your time and if that is related to your goals in the same way that we're going to talk about income. We're going to look a little bit about time trackers, but I feel like I harp on it all the time, so I don't want to spend too much time on it today. So now I'm going to ask some questions that you can't answer. So please do chime in on these. So before we get this train moving, I said that we're going to talk today about your income numbers, your marketing numbers, and your expenses. How many of you, tell me in the chat box, like just yes or no, check in with yourself regularly? That can be like as little as once a quarter or once a month about where these numbers are. This is really important and useful for me to know, because I want to talk about some different techniques for approaching that process if you guys aren't already using them. And I want to also know, for those of you who are using them, what kind of stuff you're currently using. Okay, so let me know that in the chat box. And anybody who's coaching me and says nope, just, or that I coach, know that that's something that we're going to start doing now that I've seen you say no. All right, people keep dropping those numbers in the chat box with a spreadsheet. Yep, I use denial. Is that Suzanne? Is that Suzanne Ball? Look every week. Yeah, that's really good. I feel like looking every week is probably the best possible situation. But as Suzanne said, it's, you know, not something that necessarily everybody is comfortable doing yet. And like I said, that's something that we're going to be talking about this week, is really getting comfortable with looking at those numbers. Yeah, so Stephanie has a good point here about having a Google Sheet that she accesses when she needs it. So this is definitely something that I have noticed as well for myself in the past years. So now everything is all done electronically because I'm not really doing freelance writing right now, and everything comes in through different payment methods where it's very easy for me to log in to different tools, which I do pay for actually, but I don't know if they'll help you guys, so it's not really worth mentioning. But I can log into different tools that give me the answers to a lot of these questions that we're gonna look at. But before, when I was freelancing and I kept it in a spreadsheet, I found that I would mostly go to that spreadsheet at the moment when I wanted to see if somebody was behind on paying me, or I wanted to put in a new assignment that I got, but I wasn't necessarily checking in with that spreadsheet. So I love that Terry said, I too use denial. It's very effective. I feel like denial should be the name of like a new income tracking app that we should create. That should be denial. Okay, so denial, registered trademark. You guys all heard it here first. I'm jotting it down on the side. But here's the thing is that the times, the months, the years that I and other people that I know have looked at that spreadsheet on, I'm trying to remember who it was, what Rebecca said, on a weekly basis or even more regularly are the times that very serious advancement took place. And what I mean by that in terms of looking on a weekly, daily, or monthly basis is that you are checking in with where you are, how that number makes you feel, and where you are in relation to your goal. So I'm actually going to show you pure, actual, real, raw data from my own income spreadsheets from some years ago that I did not black out the clients, I didn't black out the numbers, I didn't do anything. I just pulled the actual real spreadsheets for you guys. And I pulled my time tracker data from that time as well. And the thing is that, like I said, we want to get comfortable talking about these numbers, but not just together with yourself. So I find that if any of you guys have followed David Allen, who does this, I might have totally just screwed up his name, but the Getting Things Done methodology, he advocates a weekly check-in. A lot of people advocate a weekly check-in. And quite honestly, if you work for yourself, as in forget clients, but you are self-employed, you should be having a one-on-one check-in where you become a bit bipolar and you separate your employee you from your boss you, and you have a little meeting. And I know it sounds a little bit crazy, but it's something that we all need to do, whether it's to look at these numbers or not, on a regular basis in order to make sure that we are in line with our goals. So as we start to look at how things have gone for you in the past year, as we start to look at where we want them to go in the next year, and definitely before we get to the point of where we make specific plans that we want to hold ourselves to on a quarterly or monthly basis in that last webinar, it is ultra important that you know that you have the mechanism, whatever works for you, to check back on yourself for accountability. And a lot of people talk about accountability partners. I've used accountability partners through different writing groups in the past, or just people that I know. And some people who have come to retreats of ours have then become accountability partners. But here's the thing that I have found about accountability partners. Like, they can be so lovely, but life happens. And I've never seen this more acutely than now coaching you guys. And I think, you know, teachers say it all the time, but it's so much more true for grownups. I'm not kidding. People get cancer. People get in car accidents. People have hurricanes. Really bad things happen on an astonishing basis. And so as lovely as your accountability partner may be, there is no one who is more involved in your accountability than yourself. So you really do need to take the responsibility for being accountable to these numbers, both that we're going to look at now and, you know, owning up to them for yourself, but also to the ones that you're going to make going forward and to checking in with your goals. Okay, so I know that I kind of asked, like, do you track some of these things? But I want to know specifically, do you use some kind of tracker of any kind, whether I know some of you mentioned Excel, but for your expenses, like I know some people have invoiced me through PayPal directly. And a lot of people that I know who use something use FreshBooks and things like that. So do you have something like that either for invoicing your clients, or on the flip side, I have used in the past, though I don't really love it, and I'll explain why in another slide. QuickBooks, I think it is QuickBooks Self-Employed, which is supposed to just automatically like Mint pull all of your credit card statements in for you, and then you can operate them out by category. So either on the income side or on the expense side, a lot of people are talking about using QuickBooks and FreshBooks, but let me know if you use something on the expense side as well, because there's a lot of more household tools that can be used for expenses, but you need to hack them if you're gonna use them for freelancing. And we're gonna talk about that as well. Okay, great. So we've got SendOwl, tracking them manually. Self-employed, I think that's QuickBooks Self-Employed, but Ingrid, let me know. QuickBooks Self-Employed. Okay, great. Running log of invoices, not marketing expenses. So it seems like a lot of you are doing stuff on the income side, but not so much on the expense side. Like Rebecca said it really well. I just pay what comes in. Yeah. It's kind of like I use denial again, right? So a couple of you are using QuickBooks Self-Employed. So I just want to take a moment now, and we'll get to the expenses more in a minute. But I found that QuickBooks Self-Employed doesn't really work for us as travel writers. And I'm going to talk about how our expense setups are different than other type of freelancers later. But I just want to caution you to be a little careful, because they tend to miscategorize and make it hard to categorize a lot of things that we need to use as travel writers specifically. So I actually had to kind of hack it, and then we eventually gave up on it because I just found QuickBooks Self-Employed was a bit too annoying for our purposes. But if you are in the position, and we'll talk about in a little bit why you hopefully shouldn't be in this position, but if you are in the position of delight where you earn so much that you actually do owe the government money at the end of the year, QuickBooks Self-Employed can be nice because it helps automatically calculate that for you. But we're going to get back to that, like I said, a little bit later on in the slides. Okay, so Jade does track all her business expenses. Great. Okay, we have somebody. So here's the thing, is I feel like a lot of you, like I said, are pretty good about tracking your income. So let's look, since you do have pretty good access to that data, and if you don't, you're going to go get it before the next webinar. It's some ways for the process of this annual review that we want to be, Chelsea says she always owes the government money, and you shouldn't. We'll talk about that in another slide. But again, I'm going to do this disclaimer periodically. This is not professional legal and accounting advice, so please consult your lawyer and or accountant for further guidance on these issues. But make sure you have an accountant that actually knows how to work with these things. No, you shouldn't owe a lot this year. Okay, we'll talk about it. All right, guys. Okay, so let's get back to the review. So there's four main ways that we need to, for the purposes of annual review, pull up our income. So I think we all, hopefully, have some sense, at least, of what income we have coming in every month. You can kind of yay or nay on that. But I think we tend to be pretty good in a given month about knowing how much we have coming in, because we have to essentially balance our monthly budget of paying our own personal expenses and things like that. So if you don't already have that number to start with, then I recommend, just for the next couple bits that we're going to talk about, to at least kind of drum up what you think that that number is. So as you are adding up these numbers, and I'm going to show you exactly how I do it in Excel. As you start adding up these numbers, we want to go past that. We want to go past by month, but it's important to look at the actual data by month, because we're going to look at trends in terms of season, okay? But my first stop in the annual review process of looking at these numbers is not by month, actually. It's actually by client. And if you think you know why I do this, drop this in the chat box. But I'm going to riff a little bit while the recording catches up. But so the first stop that I do is by client. And I'm just going to jump ahead a couple slides to show you how I do that. But what I do, because I do or used to do everything in Excel, was I just very simply, every line that I have attributed to a certain client, I just build a little formula over here. And I add up every box that goes to that client. And I think I usually kind of end up color coding it, and then I double check it to make sure that all the boxes are accounted for. So the first thing, like I said, that I do is by client. So I'm trying to see, to evaluate time spent. Great, thank you, Jade. So this is an interesting one, right? Because I said I'm not gonna harp on you guys too much about time tracking in this webinar, because I do it a lot. We'll do it later. But it's not so much about the time spent. It's for an expectation check. Because I can look at my time tracker, because I do it really religiously at any given moment and see what my hourly rate on a given client is. But I think we all have this inherent gut check of what we feel like takes a long time and what we feel like doesn't take a long time that's out of sync with reality, but that it's really important for this annual review process. So the reason I like to start this whole numeric evaluation by looking at things by client is to get that gut check, because you might think that so-and-so, you're spending all of your time on them, even if in reality it's only like 25% of your month or something, but you might feel like blah, blah, blah magazine group is getting all of your time. And then when you look, it's only like $8,000 for the course of the year, or maybe 12, or whatever it is, or less, or four. And when you look at that number, you go, oh, really? And that is very important to capture. That is literally step one of this process, is to just figure out, as you look at your clients and how much they have brought in over the course of the entire year, how does that make you feel? Your feeling is important here. I know I said that today we're talking about numbers and getting comfortable with those numbers, but part of comfort is acknowledging how you feel about those things. And I know that I sound a little bit more shrinky than usual during all this annual review stuff, but it's because it's really important when we're mapping out these things that they are in touch with the reality of both us and the external reality. So you do this gut check on those initial client numbers. Okay, that's the first one. And what do we do with that gut check? We're going to talk much more next week about how we transform these data points into actionable things for the year ahead. But the very first thing is to say to yourself, does that number make me so annoyed, disgusted, etc., that I need to immediately go ask this person for more money, / tell them that I need to take on more blog posts per month if this is going to make sense, or do less work for the money that I'm currently getting. So you need to write down the recommendations for yourself, first and foremost, based on that gut check on a client-by-client level. Now, the next level that we look at is the month-by-month level. So I have this, admittedly, I know it's super tiny and hard to read, but it was hard to get too many months at a span here. So I've pulled up a whole third of the year here for you guys. And like I said, I know it's small, especially because you don't have the full slide, but you can see that the line, okay, I'm gonna do it over here so you can see, the thick line in between here is adding up the end of each month. And the way, just to give some preface on here, I have a zoomed in version so you can see, the way that I've organized each of these is that my things that are recurring that I know that I'm going to be getting every month are up here on the top, because then it's really easy because you just cut and paste the month to the next one. Okay, and then the things that are articles or things like that are one-off, so to say, even if that client recurs, go down here. So I've essentially separated out for myself so I can see really easily the recurring versus the one-off stuff. Then I have a total that's the total for the month itself, and I have a year-to-date total. And in some later months, I have a thing where I project the year-to-date total with some division over, if that rate continues, what my income will be for the month. So this is something that, in terms of setting up your own thing in the future, can be really nice because it does that automatic check for you every time if you're on track. So like I said, so the way that I set this up, let's go to the multi-month one here, is that each time on this year-to-date section, it's very simply additive, okay? So I have just simply added here on March, okay? I've added up the three previous months. So at this point, I can't remember exactly what year this was, but at this point, I'm averaging kind of around 4,000 a month, but interestingly, I had more than 4,000 at the beginning, and then I had something in the 3,000, like above 3,500 range for the next 2 months, and then it went back up to 4,000. So this is what I'm talking about looking on a month-by-month level. And you'll notice what I did here is that on the year-to-date, this is March, so there's 3 months here. So then what I've done on the year-to-date here is I've multiplied this number by 4. So if this pace continues over the course of 4 quarters, this is gonna be my annual income here. Then on this one, I multiplied it by 3. So if this pace continues, then this is what my annual income is going to be. So that's how that spreadsheet broke out. That's how I concocted it. So it's pretty simple, but it's quite effective for what we want to do. But it's particularly effective, and this is why I'm saying it's useful for you to put this together in a format that's somewhat like this, just for the annual review purpose, is to have, like I said, look at what's recurring versus what's not, because that's something else that you want to check on, and that total per month. Because then what we want to do is we look at the waves, okay? We look at the cycles. So are there certain months or periods where your income always dips? Now, I just realized a really important question that I'm very surprised no one asked, which is, how am I deciding what to put in a given month? And what I mean by that, am I putting the amount I have been paid by that month or the amount that I have been billed that month? So I mentioned this in the last webinar, so I just want to reiterate for those of you who weren't there. But in this tracking sheet that I'm doing, this is the work that I have billed that month. So that means this is the work that I completed and delivered and sent, shipped to my clients, okay? But the caveat here is that during this time, and as you've noticed when I talked about it before, all of this stuff is work that's on contract or that's in some other way recurring, which means pretty much every single thing on here, I get paid either the 1st or the 15th of this month. So all this stuff at the top, I'm getting paid basically automatically. And then the clients that I choose to work with or chose to work with back when I was doing more magazine work only pay on acceptance. So that means you get to put in your invoice as soon as they accept the article rather than when it's published. And they pay within 15 days of acceptance. So for me, this isn't too crazy to kind of have it all here when I bill it, because I'm actually getting that money in a quite timely fashion. But one thing that you'll notice, and I'm actually going to zoom this in a little bit more so that you can see, is that I started having some really obnoxious payment issues, I think, with one of these clients around this time. And you'll notice that here we're in February, and one of these things was paid in March in a timely fashion, and these other ones were paid in May or even late May. So part of the reason that this spreadsheet has a lot of notations about when things are paid is that this particular client had an issue, like their payroll person left and they got a new person who had no payroll experience that was not processing invoices accordingly. So this also, this bit about when things are paid can be really important for you to take in as well when you do your annual review, because you can also look at, is this client on the regular paying you, you know, whether it's sporadically or that the article dates get moved or something like that. And that, again, can factor into that gut check that you're doing or into this monthly cycle that we look at. So as I was mentioning, in the monthly cycle, we want to look at, are there certain months where things dip? Now, I know for myself that I used to very regularly take this February and March time, or sometimes it was May, as the time that I would be in Europe doing research. So that would, or I would be doing volunteer work. So that tended to be times that I was working less hours. So it's very easy to just look at this month-to-month fluctuation and say, oh, well, I had more work in January than I did in February. There's like a pretty sizable, for the amount of income here, gap between those 2 months. But the reality of the matter is I only worked half of February. So the amount of total income for that month is actually significantly higher than January. And that's pretty common. If you don't already have recurring work in place or relationships where you regularly write for the same editor, January can be a slow month. And so one of the reasons that we want to, let's go back to our list of what we're checking on now. One of the reasons that we want to look on this month by month way as the very important second point is that that helps us plan out when we have needs. When are there times that our income dips in a way that we can do something about or that we want to do something about? So remember I said that February and March tended to be a time that I traveled. I know for myself, I get really bad SAD, seasonal affective disorder. So I don't like to be in the northeastern US where it gets dark at like 3:30 this time of year, even this time of year right now. It's sunset right now. It's horrifying. So I would proactively send myself to other places that are cities that are interesting or to volunteer programs where I would be engaged and I would have to be active during that time, rather than sitting at home and sleeping all the time or, you know, generally being ineffective. So that was a choice that I made. However, you might find that there's other months, such as, for instance, June or something, or July, let's say, when all the editors are out of their offices, that your income is dipping, and not because you're traveling, but because of market forces. So when you look at this in a month-by-month way, you can decide either I need to market more proactively several months in advance to cover that gap, or I should change my schedule so that rather than traveling in these other times when instead I could be doing client work, I'm going to travel in that time when the client work is naturally a bit sparse. So these are some things that you can look at for yourself. Not that I'm saying let's all travel in July because it got awfully expensive, though there are some places that you can do it not so expensively. So then the thing to look at is type of client. So we can look at this in a couple different metrics. So remember on this next sheet, I talked about, actually I'll go to this one because it's better. I talked about how I separate out my recurring or contract work from my article work. Now I do that for several reasons. So on the one hand, like I said, that's money that I know is coming in every month automatically. So just looking at this, even when I'm doing it in a day-to-day or week-to-week or month-to-month basis, it's really easy for me to know this is how much money is actually for sure going to be in my bank account versus who knows. So that's on the one hand. But then as we go through at this time of year and think about these things, we're able to make decisions based on our income portfolio needs. So what that means is that we all have a different tolerance for the relationship between recurring, know it's going to be in our pocket income versus who knows when it's going to happen income. We all have a different tolerance for that, okay? And so what I mean by that is that having either your income split up like this that you can look at all the time, or for sure doing it when you put these numbers together for your review, makes you do that same sort of gut check of, oh my God, do I really have no recurring income ever? Which you might already know. Or, I actually have more recurring income than I think. Or, wow, this month I got a bunch of recurring income and then I actually got more other income. So maybe having more recurring income makes me feel better about pitching. It allows you to look at the counterpoints between these different types of clients in a one-off or bill upon receipt versus retainer capacity. But another way to split up and look by type of client is also editorial versus content marketing. And so what I mean by that is what people might call editor work versus client work, but generally you know what I mean. It's things that tend to require multiple rounds of edits versus things that you get on board with the client and then for them it's kind of set it and forget it and you just keep producing it every month. So this is another type of thing that you should look at, the relationship between. Or another way to look at it rather than the set it and forget it versus editorial is the type of output. So for instance, I don't have it split up on here because I try to keep that to a minimum, but I do write in here that for this client, I have a couple different types of work that I do. And so the reason for myself that I put this in here separately is that the Twitter for this client was on retainer, whereas the blog posts were dependent on how many I had billed that month, but she would pay me by a bank deposit. So it was basically the same as being on retainer for that work. So that's why I have these two things split up. But I kind of say for myself what each thing is so that I can remember later. But this also helps me to look back. So like, is most of my income coming from blog posts? Is most of it coming from magazine articles? Is it coming from one-off magazine articles versus packages of magazine articles? Is your income coming more from Instagram than you realize? It helps you look also not just at the characterization of the client or of the income or the type of relationship, but also the type of work that you're doing. And you do that same gut check. Do I feel good about this? Is this the amount of time on this type of work that I'm interested in spending? Or does it make me a little annoyed / nauseated? So like I know some people on this call and maybe who could be joining later have been actively pursuing content marketing work, whereas other people have picked up a certain amount of article writing work, which made them happy at first because it satisfied some very urgent income needs. But in the long run, when they look at it and they think about their goals and what they want to be doing with their time and do that gut check, it might not make them quite so happy. So let's go back and look at this fourth type of way of looking at income by marketing stream. So I have a whole slide on this, but before I get to that slide, let me know in the chat box, do you track your marketing in any way? I love how Hainani had a yes, dot, dot, dot. Okay, I turned the sound off for a second so he could get a sip of water, but you should have heard a pause and then I'm back now. So let me know if you're hearing me again. Okay, I see kind of split here. So here's the thing about tracking marketing is that you can always do it retroactively. I mean, it's not the best. It takes a little time and you have to set that time aside, which is why we're doing these annual reviews, but you can go back and do it. So interesting. Okay, great. Yeah. Great. So I'm going to show you a couple different ways that we can pull together that marketing if you didn't do it already. And this is the thing, is that there are some people who do very public displays, let's say, of their efforts in terms of pitches and articles written. One that personally just like hurts me because I don't want her to be promoting this to other people is this woman, Nicole Decker. I'm going to write it in here. And I can't remember the website that she does this on, so you'll have to look it up yourself. But let me just see if I can find it in the background. So I'm pretty sure her name is Nicole Decker and that she does these income reports for one of the main, very general, not specifically freelance writing website. And it must not be Nicole Decker because I'm also not finding it. Nicole Decker. Decker is the name of somebody on a television show. Okay, I'm going to keep looking this up in the background to make sure that I'm giving you the right name. So it is. It's Diker. Okay, it's very close. So it's On the Right Life. So I'm going to send you one so you can kind of see, and then I'm going to explain to you what I don't like about it. So yeah, she writes for Contently, but she puts it On the Right Life. But good call, Jade. That's how I found her name. So the way that she started doing this was that she was one of those folks that started, like many of us do these days, writing lots and lots of articles online. And so she would put these income reports where she would say, you know, I wrote 103 articles this month and my income was, you know, some thousands of dollars. And I was unhappy about it because I didn't like that she was kind of promoting that this is the way to increase your income. But it's really worth looking at in terms of how she tracks over time, because now it's several years back that she started doing this. I remember living in a different apartment even when I started seeing them. So there's several years of these that you can look at. And she does not go into super, super deep detail about her marketing efforts, but she does talk about how it changes and how her work has changed over time. So this is a good place to look at, again, like how I mentioned Chris Guillebeau, whose name is in the beginning of the chat file, how he has also been publicly doing his annual reviews over time. Nicole has these monthly income reports, and she mentions how her marketing affects this. And what I find really interesting when people publish these kind of marketing looks, let's call them, their marketing reviews, is that there's two sides. There's the people who fanatically track every pitch they send. And I think Mridu, who has a really oddly spelled name, so I'm going to write that down for you guys and hopefully not spell it wrong. So Mridu Kellar Ralph, I'm probably spelling this wrong. So Mridu had done just a couple, I think, with her pitches where she would send, like, you know, show that she sent 87 pitches in a year and here's exactly how many, this, that, and the other thing. And also Lindy Alexander, who is a really lovely Australian writer, has been tracking her turn to freelancing from some other things in this very detailed way. There's two schools of thought. Either they track every single pitch and you see what new work comes to them and new income levels from pitching, or I see this kind of do it once, pat yourself on the back that is what you thought it was and not do it again, look at marketing. And those tend to be the people who look, and a lot of their stuff is coming from word of mouth. And so they tell themselves, okay, that's working. I'm going to keep doing what I'm doing. But here's the thing, is that even if, you know, Carrie was saying earlier that she's just getting started, even if you are just getting started, you have probably done some of these things. There's some things that you've done that you can look at. You can look at the number of webinars that you've attended. You can look at the number of magazines that you've read cover to cover. You can give yourself some sort of metric that tracks what you have done in the arena of marketing, even if it's not sending pitches, even if it's improving efficiency or gaining materials. We're going to talk more about that when we get to expenses. But even if it's some of these things, and the reason is because you need, with marketing, the most effective thing that you're, or most important thing you're looking at with this tracking is to see the effect of these different efforts on your output, on your clients, okay? So as you are pulling together the numbers of these things, you can go through, for instance, you can go in your Gmail, you can go to your sent folder, you can just write pitch. And then hopefully if you're putting pitch in your subject line, as I hope that you all are, that should show you every pitch that you've sent this year, even if you haven't tracked it previously. And then you can go through and you can recreate a little spreadsheet that either just says the number of pitches, how many were accepted, how many were no's, or you can make a little spreadsheet for each pitch. But for the purposes of doing this annual review, you need to measure the effect of your efforts, whatever they were. So that means that if you're one of these word of mouth people, don't just tell yourself word of mouth. What mouth was that word coming from? Was it somebody that you had a speed dating appointment with at a conference versus somebody that you just chatted with at a conference versus somebody that you met at a travel massive get together? If you, for instance, I stopped going to these years ago because I found, not travel massive specifically, but I found that going to these networking events in New York tend to be composed of people who not necessarily are new per se, but of the same people and people who I didn't enjoy being influenced by, because a majority of them weren't really achieving in a big way. And the ones that I knew were doing it because they had a certain element of having gotten there first and were way ahead of everybody else. And so I realized that there weren't valuable connections to be made in that environment for me. And so, like I said, even if you are not sending pitches, are you going to some events? Better yet, are you hanging out in some Facebook groups and calling that marketing or networking, okay? Measure your networking if you don't think that you're explicitly doing marketing, because that's what it is, networking, outreach. It's all under that same umbrella. So if you're hanging out in Facebook groups, make a list of all of the Facebook groups that you belong to and catalog how many leads that you have gotten. And those leads could be, depending on where you are and what you're up to, they could be guest posts that you've been asked to write. They could be partnerships, all sorts of things like that, okay? So make sure that you're getting some legitimate, as in actual numerical, data of some kind on whatever marketing efforts you personally have been doing. So like I said, this is a super diminutive list of just like the smallest, most surface skimming ones here, okay? But whatever you are doing, whether that's spending time getting more followers on your Instagram, whatever you are doing, you're putting in time around that networking, you know, getting more followers by doing this strategy versus that strategy, write that down. Because here's the thing, is that you need to know if the marketing that you are doing is contributing to the goals that you actually want to achieve. And if they aren't, is the way that you are spending your time indicative that you should have a different goal, okay? So I said that I wasn't gonna harp about time trackers, but I did print out, or not print out, but screen grab from that same period, my time tracker for the year, for the different clients that I have going on in this sheet here. So for those of you who have not yet heard me go on and on about time trackers, they take a little bit to get used to, but the data that they give you over time is utterly invaluable, absolutely invaluable, okay guys? So I really, really, really recommend it. Because for instance, I'm personally shocked that I only spent 40 hours in that entire year planning travel. That must have been after me harping on myself to spend less. But I can go through here and I can see that like this is one of my biggest clients, so that makes absolute sense. Admin, holy crap, I hope that color does not actually mean admin, because that's way too much time for me to be spending on my emails. So the same way that we looked at your income and we are looking at expenses, I encourage you, it doesn't work unless you did it in the past, so it's something to do going forward, but I encourage you to set up a time tracker so that at the end of the year and at every month interval, you can look at this and see again that gut check. How does this feel? So let's look again at, I just want to reiterate these questions, at what we should be pulling from these numbers. Do they feel low, right? Like that's a very common thing to feel, to just look at it and feel a little bummed. And remember how I was saying that we can feel this, you know, on a month-to-month level or a client-to-client level, but it's important to do that division before we start to have feelings. Because if you just look at what you earn for the whole year, this is that whole part about not being prejudicial, right? If you just look at the number for the whole year and feel like that's less than what you wanted it to be, that's going to interfere with drawing useful data from here, okay? So it's important to allow those feelings to take place in a constructive setting. So that means looking at those numbers by client and then jotting down some action steps. You want to ask this client for more work. You want to ask this client to raise the rate. You want to tell this client that you're not going to find photos to go with her blog posts anymore unless she raises the rate or something like this, okay? And you're going to look at the dips. And so I used to find, for instance, that my magazine stuff had several very specific dips. So then what I would do was, knowing that, I would push my editors to get more assignments from them during those other periods where I knew that they were assigning a lot, or where there were things that were in my geographic area of expertise that I could gobble up, because even though I live in New York, they never had me write the New York stuff. They always had me write the Southeastern US stuff, even though I've never lived there. So as you are looking at those dips, think about, are they things that you can control within the dip, or are they things that you need to work around the dip? Are they dips that you are causing, or are they dips that the editor is causing? And then the really important thing also is, what is not worth your time? Do you add up and find that you have, I'm going to go back up to this one with the addition. Do you find that over here, when you add up the clients, see, I only have 3 clients on here. I have a couple other ones, but I didn't add them up here because I was just checking my 1099s quickly when I did this. But do you find that you have a very, very, very long list of different people that you have worked for, and that you have, you know, $50 from that blog and $100 here, or $400 from that magazine? Is that really worth your time? And how do you want to change how you do that going forward? This is going to inform our marketing strategies, okay? And particularly, are there things on there that simply need to go, that there's just no way around it, that that number, especially in aggregate of what you're getting from them, just doesn't make sense, okay? So again, with the preface, I am neither a tax nor legal professional. Please consult your own personal tax or legal professional for final advice on all of these matters. Let's talk about expenses, because I know there's a lot of chatter going on in the chat box about this. And this is a huge, huge issue that I see for freelance travel writers. Like, I think that I know maybe 2 or 3 people that are as like sassy about this as I am, okay? So I was very fortunate before I started freelancing full time that I took a course that was, I guess, their Media Bistro, that was with an editor of a magazine in Boston who also freelanced on the side, that was kind of about setting up your business and money and all that stuff. And she clued us in to this very important truth about travel writing, which is that you probably, and at this point, I'm probably doing it unbeknownst to yourself, are spending a lot of money on things that the typical tax code or the typical tax preparation specialist will tell you needs to be written off in a certain way or not at all, but that you and your line of work should be writing off. What does this mean? So meals are a big one. This is the one that most tax professionals get wrong, and it's really hard to find a tax preparer that can really do this correctly, unfortunately. I think I know one person in Boston that a friend uses I can recommend to any Boston people. But here's the deal. If you are writing about restaurants, period, so not in the place that you're in or something like that, but if you cover restaurants, if you cover food, if this is something that you cover, when you are eating out, particularly on the road, but also at anything of note in your local area, that is research. It's not the typical tax meal and expenses category, which only allows you to write off 50% of that expense. So here's the thing. I talk a lot in our workshops of all kinds and in the webinars about needing to be familiar with certain things and have a basis so you know what the trends are, so you know what is going on in that field. I sometimes reference this really funny conversation that I had a few years back with somebody who was transitioning out of doing full-time blogging and social media for a tour company and then started doing freelance writing. And he told me, I have this in with somebody at BBC Travel. I'm going to pitch her about food halls in New York. And I'm all about following trends, not just to write off all my food expenses, but because it's so crucial for pegging your pitches. And I said, what about food halls in New York? Are you going to do like the most interesting ethnic food halls in New York, food halls in New York by neighborhood? Like, what about food halls in New York? And he didn't have something past that because he didn't know enough about the subject matter to pull that together. He just wasn't up on the trends. So in other industries, you know, we have a lot of family friends who are bankers and stuff. They are constantly following what is going on in their industry, and that is part of what they do for work. You should also be reading trade magazines. Read Skift. Skift is the easiest read of all the trade stuff, and it's online, and you can get the newsletter. You should be reading that. You should be reading Eater. I skim at least, and I'm not somebody who spends a lot of time on this, but I skim like 10 or 12 different newsletter headlines. So the main ones, so Jade says, what's the best way? So I always skim Condé Nast Traveler's newsletter, which is like the CN Traveler Daily, because they are really on the nose about putting the trends in the newsletter. They have this really crappy thing that they've started doing though, where they just send around the office a super random question, like, would you take a bath in the hotel bathtub? And then they just aggregate the answers from their editors, which is like the laziest blogging ever. But you could probably sell it to your content marketing clients. But it's like the laziest thing ever for Condé Nast Traveler to do. So don't read those sections. But otherwise, it's a really, really good way to keep up on trends. I also subscribe to and glance at, though less frequently now, some newsletters or blog RSS feeds from people who write about flight travel deals, because those are super important to know. And the points guy, well, God help him. The points guy, but this guy, Gary Leff. Gary Leff is really good about telling you everything that's going on. He has a weekly thing that he does where he aggregates all the most interesting headlines in air travel. So Skift, which I know is a weird spelling, Skift for industry stuff, Gary Leff for airline stuff, and Condé Nast Traveler for consumer stuff. And then within your own geographic area or specialty areas, I'm sure you'll have some as well. But I find those three to be really the best way for me to just kind of be in touch with trends without getting lost in email newsletters personally. Okay, but that was a side thing, guys. Part of the way to be up on trends is to be traveling and experiencing. So I used to write a lot about air travel, both for USA Today online and also for some points and miles websites. And I would literally, if I hadn't been on a plane for more than 2 weeks, I would feel out of touch. I would feel like I hadn't been talking to flight attendants and I didn't know what's going on. So when I travel, I talk to cabbies. I ask them about things that they've noticed. I talk to baristas in major cities where they have people coming through. I talk to the people at the front desk at the hotel. I talk to the meeting planners at conferences that I'm going to. I talk to all these people all the time. That is part of our job of keeping up on the trends, is to be traveling, even if it is in our own city or in our own area, and having these industry intermittent conversations with people. So what that means is that for you, every time you are traveling is exposing you to these industry things that you need to be knowing about. So your travel, unless you are doing absolutely nothing that you could remotely use for work, your travel needs to be written off at 100%, not at 50%, especially your meals, guys. Okay, this is a really big one. But then there's a lot of stuff past that. Every single book or magazine that any of you buy, you need to write off on your taxes. Every single one. I swear, like, there's probably very few books that would not count for this. If even if you're reading fiction, I hope that you are taking in the story structure. Go back and rewatch that story structure webinar that I did every day. Every time you're reading fiction, every time I watch a TV show, I'm pulling things by the story structure. Not that I don't write off Hulu on my taxes, but I do write off every book that I read, okay? So the one sticky thing, the only way that we get caught up here is on clothing and kind of gear, but mostly clothing. This is really the only place that you can go wrong. And here's how. I, in normal personal life, don't hike. I just don't. For work, I hike tons, but I'm not, I just don't do that. So I remember one trip I was going that was an eco travel trip, and I had to buy a bunch of new gear because we were going to be somewhere very cold, and I don't usually hike in environments like that. So I could write that off on my taxes because it is only going to be used for work purpose. There's this uniform thing. So if you are buying an outfit as, let's say, an actor or as a waitress, if you are buying something as a waitress as part of your work outfit, which is like a plain white shirt, that an IRS auditor could say, well, you could wear that in your normal day-to-day outfit, that wouldn't fly, okay? So this is the thing with gear. If it's a windbreaker, but you could also just wear it around town normally, that doesn't fly. But if it just isn't something that in your daily life would ever get used in the clothing category, that can be written off for work. But meals. So the thing with me that I do with meals is there are certain cities that I travel to very, very, very regularly, and I always eat in the same cafe because I know that I can get work done there. So I might write that cafe expense off the first couple times because there's some amount of familiarizing myself with their offerings in the neighborhood, but then I will downgrade it to the 50% category because it's just me getting coffee and a pastry for breakfast when I'm in Berlin, and I'm not doing research in that thing so much. Okay, so that is the one time with food that you shift into that 50% category. So as I've noted here, the IRS's categories for us are super weird. And as I was talking about, this is where the QuickBooks Self-Employed starts to really fail and get really annoying and very difficult to use. So if you are using that, you need to essentially create your own like fake category code that is 100% that you stick your meals in. That's what we did for many years before we just gave up and stopped using it and went back to Excel. So another thing that I want to say about expenses, okay, is so I talked right now about kind of harping on you to make sure that you're writing off every single thing that you can humanly possibly be writing off. For instance, like I, in normal life, I don't take the subway pretty much anywhere because I walk. That's my exercise, is I walk. I'll even walk. I live in the Upper East Side. I will walk all the way to the Lower West Side. So if I have to be somewhere for a meeting at a certain time and the only way that I can get there is to take a cab, that gets written off on my taxes, okay? So let's look at, oh, there's a parenthesis missing there. I'm sorry. So let's look at a much friendlier way for you to look back at your expenses that ignores, for now, after this long diatribe, the IRS, okay? You should be looking at your expenses in these four categories. So you'll notice this last one here, where we talked about meetings and professional development travel. This is that area where you might be looking at things that are in 50%. But that is only if you are traveling to a conference and you are staying somewhere that is absolutely useless to you from a research purpose, and you are being fed the entire time at the conference apart from coffee that you're getting at Starbucks, okay? And you don't write at all about air travel, you learn nothing on your flight there or your drive there. That is really the only time that you have things that fall into this 50% category. But the money that you spent on that conference, so like that $500 or whatever that you pay to go to World Domination Summit or the whatever they cost for TBEX right now, like $127 or $157, that all gets written off 100% as development, okay? So I want you to think of these mainly three categories as you look back at your expenses and see how these things fall, because more or less, these are the expense categories that actually matter to us in terms of how we run our business. So what are you spending on materials? And I put in research here kind of as a last minute addition, because materials is what they kind of call it for taxes, but this is for that food that you're eating when you're traveling that you're paying for yourself. This obviously is for things like post-it notes and things like that. But for you, the research materials are also things like magazines, okay? Or the travel magazine database for that reason, but that kind of falls into tools. So for us, materials and research, a lot of that is simply the travel expenses themselves, okay? Now, development, this is that part where we get into learning, kind of professional development, okay? And this is something that, especially for those of you who are super, super new, you're gonna have a higher development ratio. Yeah, courses would be under development. So especially for those of you that are new, you're gonna have a higher development ratio, but this is really important. I saw an incredibly cool conference talk on this at this writing conference that I went to over the summer called the Tribe Conference, which I'm gonna write in here before anybody asks me. The Tribe Conference, and Terry got a free ticket from me. She was there. There was a great talk there on reinvesting your money into development, even at a higher level. and how important that is and how it skyrockets your business. So I cannot harp on this enough. I remember sitting in the car with my husband trying to decide if I was going to spend whatever it was, $400, if I could justify spending $400 just on the ticket to go to this conference that was about freelancing. And I remember agonizing over it and finally doing it. And it completely changed my life, like in ways that will be different for you. So I could tell you, but they're going to be different for you. But it's all about possibility. It's all about having these conversations with people and seeing what other business owners are doing and making those face-to-face connections with potential clients, or seeing how you feel about potential clients and taking yourself and your business seriously as you are spending on that development. So courses you can totally spend on, but I really, really recommend as much as possible attributing your development budget to face-to-face experiences. And if you want like a really big bang for your buck in terms of networking, shell out to go to some trade shows. There's one in London, and London's got awfully expensive, but in March, there's one in Berlin called ITB Berlin. And Berlin is a very inexpensive city. And so it's freaking frigid there, and there's not a lot of tourists, and the prices are low, and you can get a room in an Airbnb for nothing. And it's absolutely worth it to get out there and start going to these things. So the next category I have in here that I bet most of you are not spending on is tools and efficiency boosters. And this is also something you need to really look at, okay? Because most of you are not in the position where you're looking at the difference between paying for a web app, hiring, like using a tool versus hiring a person. But I am, and I can tell you that the money that you spend on these apps that organize things for you and automate them and do them automatically, or like our database, which analyzes all the magazines for you, are huge, huge money and time savers. Like, remember that I said that I don't make those spreadsheets for my income anymore because I have paid tools that do it all for me. I have things that go through all of the different revenue streams that we have, and they automatically show me which customers in the database are new and who's resubscribed, and they show me charts over time and all this kind of stuff, and I can slice them and dice them, and I can look at the past 30 days versus just this month. And it's not only saves me so much time, but I don't know if I would every day be able to check and look at those numbers and make decisions accordingly if I didn't have those tools. Okay, so this is the new way that I want you to look at your expenses as you pull them together for the last year. How much are you spending on materials versus development versus tools and versus meetings and professional development? And if you drop professional development, travel, that really means meals. And if any of these are empty, that's not good, okay? It's not good because it means that your business is probably not really a business. It's probably a hobby, because if you're not spending on some of these things, then to the IRS, honestly, they can look and say, well, you might be spending that time, but you're not taking it seriously. So the IRS can, you know, if you do get audited, and my God, all of us, let's touch wood right now. I don't have any wood in my apartment. I'm going to touch cardboard. If you get audited, the IRS will look at things like, how much marketing have you done? How many appointments on your calendar are work-related? How much are you investing in this business? That's how the IRS makes a determination between business and hobby, guys, okay? So Donna asked, will I share some of the apps that I use? Most of the ones that I use now just wouldn't really be applicable to you guys because they're around subscription businesses and processing payments. So if you do process payments, I use something called Stripe, which isn't in and of itself a payment processor, but it also gives me a lot of analytics tools. And then related to that is Baremetrics, which tracks more like your subscription websites and things like that that you guys don't have. Okay, so I hope that this was a super long webinar in the end. I hope that you guys have pulled a lot to think about from here and that you're gonna pull together a bunch of numbers so that next week when we do our next level analysis, you guys have food for thought and questions to ask me based on your numbers, and you're ready to talk about them with yourselves and raring to go for next year. So for time tracking, I use Office Time, and I've always also recommended Toggle, but Annalisa was telling me today that it doesn't have some of the capabilities. So I'm just going to say I use Office Time, and Toggle is another. And then upcoming weeks, guys. So like I said, this is a five-part seminar or workshop, what have you, five-part webinar series. We started out by talking about what's really holding people back. This week, we talked about how to gather together all the numbers to make really good decisions going forward. Next week, we're going to do some really serious analysis using those numbers to make sure that you have gone through, pulled the numbers, and had your gut checks by next week. And then we're going to launch into the even cooler part where we start to make these beautiful, brilliant, untainted, idealistic plans for the year ahead. And then we're going to do the really cool year-end call-in webinar where you can send me your stuff in advance and I will talk through and coach you live on the call. So thank you guys so much for bearing with this bundle of technical issues. I hope you have a great rest of your weekend. The sun has officially set here in New York City, and you have a great night and a great rest of, or a great weekend coming forward. Okay, bye guys.